Hello and welcome back to the Hulkcast. We're coming at you a day after Aston Villa, I guess, gained a point from Stoke, if that's how you can describe it. It was a rather disappointing 2-2 draw, but there are plenty of positives to take from it and plenty of talking points. Me, James Rushton, I'm joined by Danny Raza, as usual. How are you feeling?
Hello, man. You know what? I'm feeling very positive about it. I think that there was a lot of overreaction going out on the social media, on Twitter, like during the whole game. And I just think that it's worth saying that we turned up to a game where we really weren't on form. We were off. We were really, really off. And we managed to rescue a point out of it. So I don't feel too downhearted, honestly. It wasn't a great performance and a lot needs to be improved since then. But to come back from being behind twice, I think it says something to the resilience of the team.
Yeah, it's quite a theme for Villa at this point, isn't it? Coming, you know, from a goal down and getting back into the game. Nottingham Forest, perfect case, two goals down. And Birmingham City, again, a goal down. So fantastic stuff from Villa. But yeah, disappointed though. It doesn't mean distraught. It means we can still take some optimism. But I thought Villa would play a bit better at home against Stoke. I thought they'd rise to the occasion. And it really looked like Stoke brought their A game. And I wasn't really expecting that. I thought that maybe it's their unbeaten run that has to come to an end. And it didn't look all day until about 10 minutes ago that it even looked close to coming to an end for them. It didn't look like we were going to beat them until it was far too late. That's a shame. I think missing Jack Grealish, of course, was a huge blow.
Yeah. Missing Jack Grealish was a blow. I think that one thing that we've seen since Dean Smith has come in is that the 4-2-3-1 formation works really well. In the fact that we have a more creative midfielder sort of pushing a little bit further forward, but not only that, also dragging defenders off Tammy Abraham, giving Tammy Abraham a little bit more support up there. And I thought that's what we lacked. Just a little bit of in the game against Stoke City. Don't get me wrong, I've got nothing wrong against Glenn Whelan, and of course you'll want to start him against Stoke. Of course you'll be tempted to start him against Stoke, where he spent the better part of his career. But really, it baffled me as to why Dean Smith felt that a change of system was due for that game. A lot of it seemed as though Glenn was sort of in line with the defense, and it really felt like we were lacking a man up front. I think Conor Hourihan didn't really do a tremendous job of doing the whole box to box thing. It was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, so Villa went behind. Unfortunately, they would have went behind earlier on if Oyin Neyland didn't step up to the task. He saved two pretty much guaranteed goals, I'd say, some well-struck shots. And he stepped up to the plate and saved them. And that's, it makes a difference from recently when he's coming for a lot of criticism. And I think he really stepped up in yesterday's game. But unfortunately, it wasn't enough. I think if we're looking as to why we didn't lose the game, certainly we can look at the goals we scored. But we can also look for our goalkeeper actually stepping up and saving some shots that he's meant to save.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit disappointed with the Joe Allen goal initially, but I guess that was quite high, I guess, for him, and it seemed like more of a rocket in the end. I think Neyland obviously didn't really put a foot wrong in that game. I still thought our defense was pretty poor, but yeah, Stoke really could have hammered us a lot more. I thought they were the better side, I think, certainly going forward. And I am surprised they didn't score more against us, really, based on that performance.
Yeah, we got back into it through a penalty. That man, Tammy Abraham, buried. After Jonathan Codger was brought on, of course, Codger hauled down in the box, referee blew for a penalty, and Tammy can do no more than bury it. And I think it's fair to say that Tammy Abraham's been somewhat of a revelation for us. It's really good to have a striker up front. And I mean, Codger was on pace for it a few seasons ago before his knee injury, or well, his ankle injury. But no, for us, certainly, we've kind of lacked that. We were thereabouts with Lewis Graben last season, but he came in. Of course, if you've seen that Sunderland Till I Die documentary, you'll know that he certainly left them in January to come over to us on loan.
Nobody's seen that documentary.
Nobody's seen Sunderland Till I Die. It's on Netflix. A massive documentary. I've seen it. I've watched all of it. It's really good. But I feel like we've lacked that real quality up front. And unfortunately, Scott Hogan came down to his injuries. I can't even remember who we had up front for most of last season. It must have been Lewis Crabbe and Hogan. I can't kind of.
Nah, man. It was a long up until Jack Grealish came back from injury. I think we had this period of time where we were really makeshift, and I think we were waiting for Jonathan Codger to come back. And up until that point, basically, it was Davis, Keenan Davis. And he was our main striker.
Saved our season, I think.
Yeah. Shame he's nowhere to be seen at the moment, but yeah.
Yeah, he was a sub yesterday in the last game, but no, you didn't see much of him. And it's really unfortunate what's kind of happened to him. I mean, injuries, but he doesn't get the plaudits that he probably deserved last season. He came up really big in the first half of the season, and probably wouldn't have ended up where we did last season without him. And a big shame.
I almost think that a striker like that might have been a good call, in fact, yesterday. You know, you almost think that if you really wanted to change the system and you were lacking Jack Grealish, I would have maybe gone for the extra striker rather than the extra midfielder. I thought...
Yeah, to start the game.
Yeah. I guess this is something that Dean Smith will sort of realise over time when he sees what the team are good at. I suspect that Glenn Whelan won't get too much of a look in at this point in that sort of holding role.
Yeah, it's not that he was any bad yesterday. It's just the mobility that we need isn't there. The movement that the system demands, that Dean Smith's system demands, it isn't there. He's not mobile enough. Conor Hourihane is. But with Grealish out, Hourihane moves up. And if Hourihane had on his A game up front, and you have to, the midfield is just strangled without it. And that's, you know, that's really what yesterday's game was like. It was like a slow strangulation. Villa were outrun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's why I would say that what you want in there is either O'Hare or Hogan. I'd say ideally what you want is either O'Hare or Hogan. Don't get me wrong. Jonathan Codger came on and did brilliantly. Fair play to him. But I think that if you're lacking that number 10 who's going to run from deep, what you want instead is something similar to what Jack Grealish does really well. You want that support striker. You want that second striker, somebody who plays off the shoulder of Tammy Abraham, perhaps, and essentially drags the other defenders out. And I think that's what you want, somebody who can get in behind. And I think Hogan or O'Hare would have been ideal for that. Really what ended up happening was that Tammy Abraham was very isolated for much of that game, and that's why we were really just no threat to Stoke.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a poor performance, and what I felt myself feeling afterwards was, say if that was under Steve Bruce, I'd have been really happy with that result. You know, because the bar set lower, but we were under Dean Smith, it's just I'm a bit deflated. Stoke come to Villa Park, and they've always done a good job against us in previous seasons, but you thought maybe we could be the team to stop the momentum. And I can't be too upset with it, but yeah, the disappointment is there that Villa weren't on their game and they should have been. And I do feel for Dean Smith because he did leave it late to make changes, and I think he trusted in his system. And the system, it's still early doors yet. It's got to take effect of the whole club from top to bottom, not just the first team. It's got to go into the reserves and the next man up. And it hasn't really, really done so. And he kind of failed to adapt. But again, what do you do? Do you kind of chuck it in and change everything when it seems like it isn't working? Or do you trust in it and have faith when all it has done so far is work? It's hard.
Yeah. And I guess he does need to... I guess he does need to sort of like try different things out. But I guess, look, Stoke City, you remember from the podcast last week, James, I expected a draw. I'm not disappointed with the result at all. I genuinely came out of that game thinking, you know what? Fair play. Purely because, you know what? We didn't play to our potential. We played better than that against top sides, generally. And I think the fact that we managed to salvage something when clearly we had it all wrong from the beginning says something. We rescued something despite the fact we were outplayed and basically went into that game. We miscalculated. Dean Smith miscalculated that whole game. He miscalculated it. But somehow or another, we still managed to pull something out of it rather than giving up.
Yeah, it looked like Stoke had about twice the amount of players because we didn't have Grealish. So they were able to put another body on our key players. You know, sometimes you saw three people on John McGinn in midfield. And there's certainly two men on each of our wingers at points. Blassie and Al-Ghazi were strangled out of the game. And John McGinn, he did a superb job in that match of getting anything out of it at all. Because, you know, there's, as I said, three players on him pressing him. It was tough. And Conor Hourihan just looked rattled the entire game, and I really do feel for Villa because I don't think they expected that at all. I don't think they expected Stoke to turn up and really put the A game out because, you know, James McLean, Tom Ince, Berahino, they just ran Villa ragged. Ryan Woods, it was just so difficult.
Which is silly, really, because you look at Stoke's attack force, right, in that game, and you think you look at the lineups and you think, how on earth have we gone into that game with, I won't say the less threatening attack force, but with more of a defensive formation, with more of a defensive strategy, when you look at that side, genuinely, I thought Joe Allen, by the way, as you say, fantastic, right? And he always has been an underrated player. But you know they've come in with Ince, Berahino, and fair enough, McLean perhaps isn't your traditional forward. He's played sort of more out on the wing for them. But you know they've got that in comparison to basically what we've lined up with is Abraham up front on his own. And I think it's a bit weird to see that, to think that. You'd think we as the home side would have a little bit more emphasis on attack.
Yeah, as you said, you may have dropped Abraham a little deeper, put Hogan in, played the two up front. It seems simple for us. And I guess Dean obviously has his reasons. And I think he had every right to stick with his system. It's worked up to this point. This is the first time since it's, you know, he's really started, apart from those initial, you know, losses, and I'm not going to hold that against him or the tactics. It's just this is the first time we've encountered any difficulty. It's also the first time our defence has been really called into question. As we said last week, our defence is bad, and it's not necessarily the players. It's just the whole, the concept of our defence doesn't really exist.
Well, look, Alan Hutton's forced to play out on the left-hand side. El Mohamedy's playing at right back, which honestly I like El Mohamedy at right back, but he has no support from El Ghazi, really. And I also thought that he was a bit unlucky with the penalty. I think it was a bit stupid of him, to be honest, but it wasn't to do with defensive frailty, I don't think.
Yeah.
It was just dumb. And I don't honestly know, looking back at that, whether it was a very hard penalty to give anyway. El Ghazi on the right-hand side isn't going to be able to shield El Mohamedy. Alan Hutton on the left-hand side, look, he's a right-back playing at left-back. It's just not good enough.
I think I saw the point brought up on Twitter that he was really good at left-back last season, but now we're asking so much more of our full-backs than to just get the ball, hoof it, and then run up in support.
Yeah.
We're asking them to play football. So, but then again, there is times yesterday when he just wasn't there, and you could see him kind of ambling back to his position. And the first goal we conceded, the Joe Allen one, it's just where was he?
Well, you've got him up against Tom Ince, you know, at left back, and that's just, it's unfair, really. I mean, I guess you can see where it might work with the whole cutting in, but yeah, no, he's not a left back, and he's getting too old to fill in there. You know, let's say how it is. He's losing his pace, and I think if you're a right back playing at left back, you're gonna need to have that sort of extra step, you know, in case the winger sort of runs past you on your outside, and Alan Hutton won't have that at the moment.
Yeah, still a big problem, and it's not one we're going to be able to solve anytime quickly. James Bree still kind of carrying an injury. Would you have set him loose the last match?
No, just for him just to come.
You'd have to go at left back, wouldn't he? And that's just not suitable at all. But yeah, he might have the fitness. I say fitness, he's carrying an injury. He might have the pace. I don't know. It's just it's something that's not going to be solved until we chuck money at it. Is it because we don't have Mitch Clark? Because we let him go? Don't know why. We had no left back, so why would you let him go? No idea. But yeah, again, that's another Steve Bruce decision. Tommy Alphick picking up man of the match. But yeah, we don't really need a centre-back. No, we need centre-back support, but Tommy Alphick's picking up man of the match awards at Hull. Just I don't get it.
No, I know we've addressed this so often. I think he really didn't leave us in a mess. Really left us in a mess.
Let's be honest, Alphick, love him, but he wouldn't get in over Twanzabe or Chester. It's just the fact that you need him on the bench, and I don't think that's very respectful of him and his abilities, just bring him back and pull him on the bench. I don't know. It's just the whole thing. I mean, maybe he could play back three, but then we'll need another centre-back anyway.
But I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I guess against a side like Stoke City, I'd probably go Elphick over Tanzibi.
Well, yeah, I mean, you were justified in that because he had a right mare at one point. Nyland was coming out to claim a ball, and Twanzibi, you know, even if Nyland didn't call for it, it wasn't vocal enough. Twanzibi took it right out of his hands.
He's not good enough in the air. He's a fantastic centre-back, don't get me wrong. He's not good enough in the air. And against Stoke City, you probably want to be. I mean, fair enough, we weren't really troubled in the air by them yesterday. But yeah, he still makes mistakes, Twanzibi. And with a player like that, you can't expect them to play every single game in the Championship. Just because it's a long old season, they're still learning. And yeah, you want to be able to bring Twanzibi in when he's called upon, but you know, you need the experienced heads in at times like these.
Yeah, I think with our defensive issues and the way we play out the back, we do look comfortable playing the ball out, you know, in certain positions. Like we'll happily pass it back to Nyland, who will pick out someone. It's good, but I think what our system demands is the reason why Liverpool paid so much money for Virgil van Dijk, because not only is he comfortable on the ball and he can pass, he's going to find that risky pass that no one else is looking for.
Van Dijk's also the ultimate centre-back, isn't he?
Yeah, no, he's a perfect, complete centre-back. And yeah, you can look at the fact he was playing against Villa under-23s last season for Southampton. But we'll pick the boring safe pass, and that can sometimes invite actually more pressure on. If you're passing around in a triangle in the back, yeah, it looks good and it's what you should do. But when Stoke kind of start leaning forward and pressing you, then you've got problems and no one's going to pick the risky pass to kind of unleash Villa.
Do you know who was really good for that? Like, if you ignore the on goals.
Go on.
Richard Dunn. He loved a little pass over the defence, didn't he?
Yeah, and I feel like that's what we're missing. And maybe it's instruction, so maybe I'm talking out my backside here. But I feel like that's something that will be exploited at Villa. You know, we're getting beat on the wings with pace and power. We're getting beat in the centre because we won't take risks. And it's Villa's defence is a calamity. And I can't explain that to anyone. You know, look at the players. And the players we've got there are all good enough. It's just, there is just something lacking. And it can't always come down onto the goalkeeper. It really can't. Because if the defence isn't there, it's pointless having him. Pointless having anyone in goal with the chances we gave up yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a shame. Stoke City basically were just far better in terms of shooting. We let them have 16 shots on goal.
Yeah,
that's not good enough in general from us. And that basically tells you that having the extra man in midfield did not help in stopping Stoke City from creating opportunities. That's what's interesting to me, because you would think that, you know, having that anchor man in there helping out the defense, you'd be stopping things, wouldn't you? But this is where we maybe miss somebody like Jedinak, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't think he'll play again for Villa, which is unfortunate, but he'll get his dream move. You know, well, the move he deserves back to his home country, and he'll be the star man there. But it just looks like we don't have room for him, and he's done a really good job for us so far. I think it's a shame that the climax of his Villa career wasn't as good as how it started.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, Stoke City is far better at passing, better, you know, more possession. I guess it's difficult to put the finger on one particular problem, because I think a lot of this applies to the midfield as well as the defence. We conceded two goals. Yes, we did. One of them was a silly penalty. One of them was, you know, somewhere where perhaps Alan Hutton should have done better. But all in all, it was a performance where the midfield failed to control the game. Man for man, we didn't beat Alan Woods and Klukas, who I think man for man, you can make a very, very arguable case that are better than Hourihane, McGinn and Whelan as a three. And I'm not saying that's the case, but what I'm saying is you can argue it. And then, of course, up front, I guess we were fine, I guess.
Oh, yeah, all in all, a real shame. I think it was an opportunity missed. But, yeah, I'm going to sit here and look at the positives. And that's a point one. That's a point we might not have had under Steve Bruce. So, yeah, I do applaud the team there. It's just a shame how it all went down. And I think the weather, you know, the entire situation of the match, the context of the match, freezing cold, rubbish weather. You leave that and you can't help but feel a bit, oh, I wish that was a win. But yeah.
No, but it's a point. It is a point won rather than a point lost.
Yeah, I totally agree. It is a point gained. And yeah, Villa are turning these games that they should have lost into draws and games they might have drawn it under the previous regime into wins, like the Middlesbrough game. We took a win there we probably shouldn't have had. So we'll take that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, before the game, exactly. Tough team playing away and we beat them 3-0. So take that.
And these are racking up.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate that due to the way the club was left in October, that we need more wins and draws if we want automatic promotion, which is the club deserves.
Well, look, what I said was that we're doing better than we're supposed to be anyway. Like the fact that we're even where we are and the fact that we're getting the results that we are in general, despite the fact we are absolutely... We're basically a Frankenstein. One of Frankenstein's monsters at the back at the moment. You know, we are pieced together somehow or another. You know, we're throwing people at left back who aren't supposed to be playing there. We've only got two centre backs. We've got somebody who perhaps is more considered a winger playing at fullback. It's not my opinion. But, you know, the fact that we're even where we are right now is good. You know, we were left in a mess. So I can't sit here and say that I'm disappointed, you know, getting draws against the likes of Stoke City or West Bromwich Albion when 2 months ago we would have lost those fixtures.
Yeah, we're all looking at this from the fixtures over the festive period and before. And I think from the Derby game onwards as a horror schedule. And we've come out of it looking really good. So massive plaudits there. I think Dean Smith's done an amazing job at Villa. And how positive are we? And, you know, the fact that we're looking at a 2-2 draw and discussing what we're disappointed with, a 2-2 draw against recently relegated Stoke with a really decent team and a good manager, and discussing our disappointment, I think that's a massive turnaround.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm happy with the fact that we managed to pull goals back in that game. We could have shut down. We could have shut off at the sight or at the idea that you know they've got the better of us twice. They've gone in front of us twice, but we've still managed to come back. And I think that's just it. Just shows more resolve because we wouldn't even dream of coming back from a goal down last season.
No, not at all. And we saw that many times against Sheffield Wednesday, especially just getting battered and on our own turf. And yeah, yesterday we were well beaten on our own turf, but we came out of it with a draw.
And you cannot count us out. That is the point. You cannot count us out right now. We are that side who is always basically you. If you are leading against us in the 80th minute, 85th minute, watch your back. You know that is what I'm saying. You know when we.
Have you turned into Villa's hype?
No, I'm just saying, James. Like, look, it's good. It's good to see. I remember the days last season where, in fact, even earlier in this season, you know, where it's 1-0, seconds to go, maybe. Let me replace that. Minutes to go, 80th minute, 85th minute. You do not see us in possession. You do not see us create a single chance. And I've seen that happen so many times. And you just think there's no point watching the rest of the game because we absolutely shut off. And I'm seeing something different from us now. And again, I'm just happy with the fact that we came back into the game. I'm not trying to be somebody who's overly positive. There was so many negatives in that game. But sometimes you have an off day. Teams have their off days. Arsenal, for example, today had their off day, didn't they, right? It's just one of those things. But the fact that we were able to get a point on our off day is just saying something.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more there, mate. I think you've really nailed that. And I think with your new role as Villa's hype man, I'm expecting you to come out, lead the team out with like Flavor Flav, with a massive clock.
Flavor Flav.
Yeah, with a massive clock around your neck, screaming into the mic. I thought I'd enjoy that, personally. But enough hype. I'm going to need you to give your match ball award. The game.
I am going to give my first one to Jonathan Kodjia because of the importance of that goal.
That's, yeah, bang on. My one has to go to John McGinn. Didn't do much in terms of goals or whatever, but being double marked, triple marked on occasions, pressed across the game, kicked about, took the Grealish role of getting battered, and looked really good, looked in his element, and came out of that match with my, you know, my respect goes to new levels for him after that. I mean, it was already high enough already, but man, really good. World-class performance yesterday from him. I can't rave about him enough. You know how difficult it is when you're playing football and one man's chasing you down, how pressurised that is. He had three really good midfielders or defenders on him at most points in the game, and he came out of it looking good. So fantastic. Shame that some of Villa's other players couldn't kick on, but yeah, it was difficult for him. So we've got Kodjia having one from you, McGinn having one from me. Who's a joint one? And I wanted to say Nyland for my original one, but I can't look over McGinn.
So there's three guys here, in my opinion, who you can give this to. And it is honestly really hard because I understand what you're saying with Nyland. He, to be fair to him, he did make six saves. Stoke City did have a real go at him. And I hear that. But also, Tammy Abraham, I think he won the penalty and was able to take it, and that's fair to him. He was also sort of almost playing on his own up there in a sense. But then I think, like, the one that I'm leaning to just at the moment, and we'll figure this out. We'll figure this out. The one that I'm leaning to at the moment is Yannick Bolasie switching onto that right hand side, and, you know, finding the position to send that cross into Jonathan Kodjia. I am very, very inclined to give it to him because of, again, for that goal at the end. It's a hard one for me, James.
I think we're going to go with Bolasie, mate, if you're ready for that.
Sure?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Nyland just did his job and didn't go above and beyond. I think Abraham, I don't know what to say. He was really good. But when you're looking for impact, I think Yannick Bolasie had a really tough game. Like Kodjia, double marked. No, like McGinn, double, triple marked on times, kicked about. Had some difficulty. Passes misplaced, shots taken, lack of confidence maybe at some points. But he came up when we needed him, and we needed him late on to deliver that crossing, and he did. So I say Bolasie.
Yeah, I think it's also worth mentioning that he did help the defence a couple of times as well at very key moments, particularly sort of when Villa were on the back foot. And I think it's worth just pointing that out. He did make two tackles in that game too.
Yeah, I think he may not have had his best game. He may not have had a man of the match game, which is ironic, but I think when we really needed him, he was there, put the good ball in as he does. He became himself once more, found the space, and got us back into the game and saved that point for us, which is yeah, I think deserving of a match ball, to say the least. Shame for Nyland, who probably would have got his maybe only award that the goalkeeper can get this season. But Bolasie, take the cake, really.
Is this Bolasie's first match ball?
I think it's his second.
Second? Right, okay. Fair.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, I'm down with that. McGinn's had a few. Kodjia, I think that's Kodjia's first. Granite Limits.
It is, yeah. It is. But he's had the chance to, that's why.
Yeah. That's true. So yeah, happy with that. 2-2 against Stoke. Again, there's reasons to be disappointed, reasons to be optimistic. It's a perfect draw, really, isn't it? But next week, Sunday, we play Leeds United. This is the world-famous Leeds United, the table-topping almost Leeds United. Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds United. Villa seem to be in for a bit of a test at home.
I really don't want to lose this one. I'm not going to lie.
Is there any particular reason you don't want to lose this one rather than losing at home?
It's not that I don't like Leeds United, but let's be real. We're the two big boys of the Championship, aren't we? I think Aston Villa and Leeds United are the two alpha males in the Championship. They're the two teams that should be getting promoted every single season.
He can only get promoted once.
No, I
know what you mean. I'm being pedantic. I just thought.
For every single season, the Championship starts off.
You'll have a Nottingham Forest fanship up now going, what about us?
No, I let them. But when was the last time Nottingham Forest were challenging for anything? Leeds United were there or thereabouts in the '90s. You know,
they've been there or thereabouts forever, pretty much.
Yeah,
yeah. Before we were born, mate.
Exactly, and I think Leeds United show more now than Nottingham Forest do at the moment in terms of, you know, in terms of ambition. And I think also, I think, look, I wouldn't have maybe said it last season or the year before, but this season, Aston Villa and Leeds United both look like teams with big ambitions. They both look like teams who, if they got promoted to the Premier League, would be fine. And I think really when you look at all the sides in the Championship, perhaps Leeds United, Aston Villa are up there as the two strongest. I'd say there's four teams in the Championship who are above the rest of them at the moment, and I'd say that's Villa, Leeds, Norwich, and West Brom. So yeah, it's a big clash. I don't want to lose this game.
Me either, mate. Really, I really couldn't take it if we lost this one, especially because I think you really want to match Leeds' pace if you want automatic promotion, or even to finish like third, which is probably the most powerful playoff position you can finish in, third, because you play the sixth place team. If you want to finish third, you've at least got to keep pace with Leeds, because there's we looked at the start of the season and said, you know, that there is no strong, really strong team in this Championship. There's no Fulham or Wolves or even Cardiff. You know, this is for the taking. And then you kind of look at Leeds and go, okay, there is a team now setting the pace. And Norwich are still there. Employed this to them. And Stoke, as we've seen, so teams are waking up and getting there. And Tony Pulis's Middlesbrough ain't going away, despite us caning them. So it's just, it is getting hectic. Villa need a win. I wouldn't say it's the end of the world if they lose, but they want to think about this as a six-pointer. And again, we won't go too deep in this match because I've already recorded a 40-odd minute preview with Leeds fan John McKenzie about this, where he can speak at length and with the insight and expertise that only a fan of that team can have. But we know enough about Leeds and how they've played this season and their manager, Marcelo Bielsa, to say that this will be... It'll be a test. I think Leeds fans are actually looking at this as themselves as a test, and they've got a really shallow squad. This Christmas period might tear them apart. Who knows? That we'll only know that after the fact. And this game on the 23rd is when that period kicks off. So until that match is done and dusted, Villa versus Leeds, we won't know anything. You know, it's all good saying Bielsa's a great manager. He is. Leeds have a great team, maybe. But they're certainly performing really well. We won't know how it plays out until afterwards. It's all up in the air.
Well, look, the top of the table. So, if we're going to look at it and try and hype it, du jour, this is basically the best team in the Championship at the moment. So, we've got to be up for it. We have to be up for it, and let's just hope Jack Grealish is back.
Yeah, if there's a team I'll compare Villa to right now, they do seem to be very comparable to West Brom, Darren Moore's West Brom. Mm-hmm. And West Brom have kind of had the upper hand over Leeds this season, so they might be behind in points, but I think they beat them this season. So I think that's what I heard off John. So yeah, talking about backside there. But, you know, at home, I think Villa step up the game, even if Jack Grealish isn't there. Give Leeds something to worry about, and don't let them double mark your best players, please.
Yeah.
Glenn Whelan wasn't bad, but no one's going to mark Glenn, the defensive midfielder. But, you know.
Can I just say as well, what I don't know what the point of Glenn Whelan was in that game. He did not make a single tackle.
Yeah.
That is a fact. That is a fact. He did not make a single tackle.
He was just there to recycle the possession, and the mobility wasn't there. You know, he's not going to make a tackle unless it's in a desperate circumstance.
He is basically... at times he's done well. He's come off the bench and he's absolutely bulldog teams, right? And I think that's what's really good about Glenn Whelan, and there's definitely a place for him in the team. But if he plays like he did, or plays in the position that he did the other day... he's basically a less mobile Ashley Westwood.
Yeah, I was thinking yesterday, Ashley Westwood would be all right in this team. You know, it's amazing what these conclusions bring you to, and how Villa players eventually turn out. But yeah, I don't think Whelan was bad against Stoke. I just think the role wasn't needed. You know, I don't think we needed that. We needed someone like, say, Romain Sawyers, who we're linked to. Someone to just... again, bulldog him, but also someone who's going to be holistic. and carry the ball from the back to the front.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Someone for the other team to worry about, and it's no, you know, I'm not going to sit here and diss Glenn Whelan, who's done a job for us all season, but I am going to say no one is going to mark Glenn Whelan when he's playing that far back.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's going to be able to hit him. And yeah, he's not going to make a tackle because the runner plays completely against him. So it's just unfortunate for him that he was in that position. But it's going to be tough. You know, Leeds, and Marcelo Bielsa watched every single Leeds match before he applied to that job. He takes his job seriously, as any manager should do, worth their salt. And he comes into the game with a reputation of a manager with a passion for the game and an analytical mindset applied to, you know, a true holistic footballing philosophy.
He is the football hipster's choice in general, Marcelo Bielsa, isn't he? He is one of those managers who will basically be the front cover of indie football magazines, people dissecting his system, what he's done at his previous clubs, and that's what Marcelo Bielsa has always been. And I think actually, right, let's set this aside and think from a neutral's perspective. You have two beautiful footballing sides playing against each other, and you've got Dean Smith against Marcelo Bielsa. I think you've got the two most analytical tactical managers in the championship up against each other, and I think it could make to be a thing of beauty.
With that in mind then, and with in mind that we've got a massive Leeds preview podcast to roll out, an additional podcast for you guys, I'm going to need your prediction for Villa versus Leeds, mate.
It's hard because I don't know if Grealish is going to be back or not.
Let's assume he won't be.
Let's assume he won't be. I'd want Whelan out and O'Hare in. And you know how sort of picky I am about picking youngsters in general. But I think, you know, it is almost time. I'd perhaps do that, give them something to frazzle their mind. If we were to do that, I would give us a 3-1 victory.
That's the exact result I was going to go for.
Really?
The exact one, yeah, 3-1. I'm going to stick with my guns as well and say 3-1. Fortunate to be boring, mate, but I was literally going to say 3-1.
Oh, good.
So me and you on the same page.
We have to get going and play 4-2-3-1. We need to play with a number 10. We need somebody who's going to come off the back of Tammy Abraham, ideally. We can't go into it with the mindset of having a linchpin midfielder. We don't play like that, and our wingers aren't fast enough to deal with that, in my honest opinion. So yeah, that's what we need to do. We need somebody who's able to keep this game a narrow.
I'm not saying 3-1 because I don't rate Leeds. It's just Villa need to bounce back. I think they've got the right coaching team and the right mindset and the right manager to bounce back. It's just going to be a big ask, but it's at home. I think we've got a lot going for us. Leeds have a shallow squad. They've got a lot coming up. And they've lost Saez, of course, to Getafe. So that's a blow. I'm hoping we turn up on a day, as we should. Big occasion. And blow Leeds away, because this would be a massive statement. So the championship would be like the derby. If we win, it'd be bigger than that derby game. Not the second city derby, but the Derby County one away. That was a massive result. This would be just as... It'd be bigger. It'd be massive. And I really hope Villa can do that. I wouldn't be disappointed to lose to this Leeds team, especially one with Bielsa at the helm and one that is at the top of the championship. It would just be a know your place kind of result. Yeah, it'll be gutting.
I would be disappointed. I would be, because now this is our, like, you know, you look in the Premier League, and if you're a fan of a big side, this is your Liverpool versus Manchester United. This is your Chelsea versus Arsenal. This is your Spurs versus Arsenal. This is when you're playing. This is you're playing up against basically your biggest rival for promotion. I think that's what Leeds are to us, genuinely. And I think that a defeat against them would be gutting. Because, as you say, it would be like a know your place kind of thing, wouldn't it? And if you lose to them, you're basically being told, well, look, you're not the big dogs in this this race. You know, we are. And I think that we need to do that to Leeds United. Because otherwise, they're going to have the one up on us for the rest of the season.
Yeah, but again, it's maybe I'm too submissive then in my support of Aston Villa, and I've become accepting of a lower role in the championship. You're totally right. I think a know your role loss, know your place loss. It would, wouldn't it? Being told by Leeds United fans who had a good season, being told by their club that yeah, you went on our level, and we've beat you at home, at your big stadium, we beat you. Cutting.
Exactly.
Change my mind in seconds.
That being said, right. I'm not gonna push aside the possibility that a massive Pontus Janssen header basically buries us in the 90th minute. There's always that possibility. They do well against this Leeds. They do. It's just the way that they play. But it should be interesting to see what happens when Bielsa meets Smith.
Yeah, for sure, man. So thank you for coming on today, mate. That's the end of the podcast. Where can people find your good work?
At Raza Journo, but it's mainly just tweets now, man. my work is I'm not got any secondary projects at the moment.
Fair enough.
Put it that way. But you can send in any comments that you have for the show towards me or James.
Yeah, you can find me at Jamie Rushton and find us together at 7500 to Holt. I'm not sure if we'll have an episode over the Christmas period because I'm away. And the so I'm not going to be on my mic or anything or have my mic with me. But we'll see. And so have a good Christmas, maybe a good New Year. I think we'll have an episode before the New Year, maybe, I believe. But as for Leeds United and Swansea, you'll have to stay tuned to the site and see if I'm bothered enough to write anything about it over Christmas, pretty much. But yeah, thanks, Danny, for coming on. Thank you all, guys, for listening. Have a good Christmas. Have a good New Year. And here's the 3 points, hopefully. Goodbye.